Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission.
Good evening, Dr. Curtis. How are things going for you?
Pretty good. Another most of a week down and kind of getting close to the weekend, so things are on the downhill swing at this point.
Yeah, we're just prepping for whatever school's going to look like up here. So I'm sure a lot of people, both in South Texas and other places where we have listeners, are dealing with all virtual, hybrid. And so, thankfully, we're doing, a little bit of a hybrid. So 2 or 3 days a week in person and other days virtual. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. And I'm sure everybody's dealing with that. So.
Yeah, my kids started, I think this is their second week, and I think it's their second week. And it's been interesting. Now, they're doing about 3 weeks where they only do, home virtual work, and then my kids are going to go back to a hybrid. That was their desire, to go back to a hybrid. I feel like it's safe to do that. And that's what we're going to do, assuming, everything plays out. In our area of the world, it seems like the COVID cases have, at least the peak has gone by, and seems like it's burnt through a good portion of our community at this point. So hopefully that's going to be good, and we don't see some giant surge or more fatalities and all these kind of things. I think we're still going to have some issues with it. But as far as the kids go, they seem content to be back doing schoolwork and things like that. Although they're sort of like hamsters, staying in their room so often, with their hunched over their computer.
It's funny, as much as you and I both look at the data and try to be educated on it, in some ways I feel like we're still living a movie or a scientific experiment. I don't know which, so it'll be interesting to see how everything plays
out. I talk data with people all day long, and it's tough to get good answers because there's so much data being compiled probably on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, and then trying to make heads or tails of things. And I think the other thing that makes it really, crazy to try to, it's like trying to, like you're chasing your tail with all the data, is that there's a lot of misinformation too, and it's like things get interpreted and misinterpreted, and then because it's on Facebook, it's got to be true. And, there's a lot of this stuff that goes around. I know I've ranted about this before, and my patients probably hear me say it too much too, but it's one of these things that, I don't want to fast forward. I just want to experience it as it is and, live my life the way it is. But like, I'm very interested to see what the data looks like 1, 2, 3, 5 years later. I really think we're going to see some interesting things. And I'm interested also to see how this whole situation and how we shut down the world and how it affected the healthcare system. I'm very interested to see what happens to other health issues. I'm afraid, or at least concerned, I should say, that we're going to see spikes in cancer deaths and things like that because of there was like big gaps of screening delays and, cancer screenings, and people just they just decided not to do basic health issues for a long time. And I think hopefully that's changing now. I know my team in South Texas, we're back seeing patients, and we're back treating people for routine problems. And I know that if you look at just metabolic disease, heart disease and diabetes, forget about COVID, that's one of the number one killers in our country. In fact, probably 3 or 4-fold times the number of deaths than COVID-19 would be heart disease, diabetes-related illnesses. And so it's one of those things. I just want to make sure that people are really, really taking care of those issues. And so I just kind of wonder what that data looks like a few years from now.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we talk about in the military, when you unfortunately lose people, especially in training accidents, that we say the lessons that we have in doctrine are written in blood, unfortunately. Right. And so I just hope that everything we've gone through will provide some lessons learned, so that when we deal with, another pandemic that has a higher mortality rate than this one does. I mean, 'cause you think about it, even though you hear like horrible cases of, it decimating nursing homes, or, God forbid, you do hear some children dying or people in the prime of their life. But I mean, you know, it's not Ebola, it's not smallpox, you know, it's not the Spanish flu, it didn't seem like, even though people were worried it was like that. So I think that maybe, hopefully, we'll learn some lessons now that when we get, you know, COVID, I mean, it's probably inevitable that in human history, you're going to get an outbreak in something that has like a, you know, God forbid, a 30 or 40% mortality rate in all demographics, you know, and so hopefully whatever, you know, that's what, from a military perspective, I'm hoping that, you know, we learn some lessons to say, hey, how do we simultaneously, like you said, treat the problems that we know are probably still going to kill more people, you know, like diabetes, heart disease, things like that. And, you know, because you can't almost stop the spigot on one just because you're treating the other. Right. So, I mean, how do you do that smartly? You know, I guess serve all masters. So hopefully we learn some lessons on this.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm hoping that because of this experience, just like you said, now we have these industries built around rapidly developing vaccines, investigating that, you know, maybe there's a lot more interest. Maybe young people look to study in these fields because they realize, you know, it can be a life or death situation. Maybe it renews, you know, researchers' interest in a fresh field of study. I mean, there's a lot of positives. And I will say one thing that's I've learned, and I know for folks that are in the Future Focus Health Network, which we talk about our platform where we like to have a positive community, I'm constantly posting things that I hope are positive in the mindset category, because I think it's when things are grim and things are going wrong, I find that it's so good to look at a situation and try to find whatever the bright spot is, you know, and clearly 100,000 people dying it's a lot to, you could be grim about, or one could look at that and say, there's going to be some positives that come out of this whole situation for mankind, you know, certainly. Mm-hmm. And I always try to focus on that, and hopefully others are doing the same.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things, I guess, you know, getting to tonight's topic that I was thinking about, which is I try to think of interesting counterintuitive things, right, that can you know, keep our listeners off guard but also interested at the same time. So, you know, one of the things that I think we're going to talk, or the main thing we're going to talk about tonight, is poetry, you know, of all things, which I don't know, I've been trying to read things that are more enduring and less temporal or temporary, I guess you'd say, as I reflect on everything going on with the election year, social unrest, you know, fill in the blank. It seems like every time you turn around, you know, back-to-back hurricanes in the Gulf. I mean, you know, people make jokes about it, and, you know, in the military, familiar with gallows humor sometimes is the only thing that keeps you going, right? So, but I think the more I understand about people, and as people evolve, you know, one of the things that seems evident is that with our cell phones and social media, everybody's attention span, you know, seems to be going down, right? I mean, everybody has like some form of, you know, ADD, it seems like, right? You go from one thing, you go, especially the younger folks that didn't grow up, you know, with the same media that we did. So I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, you know, what are things that are meaty and meaningful, but are easy to digest? And by easy to digest, I mean, you know, short, you know, easy to get through. You know, we're not talking about War and Peace or these, you know, 1,000-page-plus novels that, you know, almost nobody's going to have the patience to read, you know, these days. So I was thinking about poems, and I started thinking about poems that impacted me, or I thought really unpacked a lot about the human condition in a short few stanzas. And so tonight, I think we're going to cover, you know, one of those poems, and maybe, you know, we'll have a whole, you know, meaty poetry, you know, group of podcasts, because I really think that, especially ones that were written, I think, you know, more than 50 years ago, you know, because you think about something that's, endured the test of time, even with all of our access to information, if people still read it and talk about it, there's probably something to it. You know, you and I talk a lot about Stoicism. I mean, you know, that's thousands of years old, you know, and there's right. tons of people that still, you know, look to it for guidance and advice. And so I think that, you know, now, I mean, I think anything that's like more than 50 years old that people are still teaching and reflecting back on is probably important. So, you know, that's, I think what we're going to cover tonight. So.
Sounds great to me.
Yeah, so what I'm going to do is just you know, do a semi dramatic reading of the piece, and then hopefully we'll go through the entire poem and break down our thoughts on it. So the poem tonight is "If" by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting or be lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone. And so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. So, I can't remember when I first heard this poem, and I think it was in a military context, just because it reflects on so many things with the human condition. So, you know, hopefully we can start breaking this apart. So, I mean, there's a lot to unpack, but when you heard it, I'm sure, you know, you've read it before, but with me reading it, what's the first thing that kind of struck you?
Well, as you go, if you just kind of skim it stanza by stanza, it's talking about various human virtues and things. The ideal man is what I read. Mm-hmm. All the traits we love to see in ourselves and love to see in others are described in very few words. And I think it will be fun to kind of break this down because it's instructional. For anyone who cares to be improving themselves, each stanza is instructional and there's a wisdom and a lesson in each stanza. And I think it's super powerful. I think I read this first in high school, but it's interesting as time goes by. Like if you would have told me, hey, tonight we're going to read some poetry, and there may be listeners out there that hear this. And they're going to think, oh my gosh, what are these two guys doing? They're reading poetry tonight? That's what I might have been like as an immature sophomore in high school, maybe.
For sure.
But now, when I read this, I'm like, I'm a father, and I lead other people in my company and my people look to me for advice. So I see stuff like this, and I go, yes. Well, I want my kids to know this. I want them to understand it. But I think maybe that's the thing about poetry, is that the more you read, sometimes you can read different poetry and it speaks to you differently over time. Like things jump out at you. And that's why I thought it was interesting to read this again, and different areas jumped out at me. Maybe things I needed to hear, or maybe things that I know in my heart of hearts are a weak spot for me. You know, maybe my Achilles.
Yeah, I mean, let's just start from the top and break it down, Roger. and try to get it through and package it for everybody. But so if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. And the first thing that struck me is probably one of the first powerful and painful lessons I learned being in the Marine Corps, which was bearing. And I talked about bearing, I think, in some of my leadership traits and values, podcasts I did that I need to probably continue. But so bearing is a word that I don't think I understood in that context until I got in the Marine Corps. So you think about, you know, getting your bearing straight, like, you know, that's the way I thought about it, you know, almost like nautical, you know, or like, land navigation, right?
Right.
But in this case, it was... But in the military case, and I think what it's talking about in this poem is there's always value in keeping a level head and, you know, don't lose your bearing is what I think about. And it applies to so many things, because if it's a bad situation, and whether it was your fault or not, you know, everybody wants to be Chicken Little, the sky is falling.
Right.
But even if you feel like that inside, and this was the military lesson, you know, God forbid you're in combat, people are getting killed, and you're an officer, especially, you know, we were training to be, you know, rifle platoon commanders at that point. And it's like, hey, everybody's going to look back at, you know, the corporal is going to look to the sergeant. The sergeant's going to look to the staff sergeant, and it's eventually going to get to you. And you being the officer in charge may not have anybody to look back to, at least not immediately. So one, you know, and they told it to us like, what now, Lieutenant? You know,
right.
Everybody's going to have a what now, Lieutenant moment. And whether people realize it or not, if you're a parent or in your job or in life, everybody's going to have that what now, Lieutenant moment. So that's what this, you know, spoke to me about.
Yeah. And in the next line, when he says, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, that was exactly what we talked about in one of our more recent episodes, where he talked about learning to trust your own thought process, be your own counsel. And
yep.
People might doubt you, but if you know better because you've done your research or you've sought appropriate counsel, then it's okay to trust yourself when other people doubt you. And I just thought that was kind of interesting. That one jumped out of me in this stanza because we had just talked about this, I think it was a week ago, when we talked about this very topic.
Yeah, and what I like about how that ties in is there's almost a dichotomy in those like the line 3 and 4, because it's saying, you know, trust yourself, but not so much that, because it says make allowance for their doubting.
Right.
So when I see that, I think about humility. So be confident.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're prepared and you know that you're making the ethically right decision or the decision informed, you know, without emotion and with data, but don't lack humility, you know, just because you're right doesn't make you perfect.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, a lot of times you see this in relationships, right? I mean, you want to try to, you know, die on the hill of a cheesy argument when, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, it may create, a scar there that is not worth creating.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary.
So I think, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, moving on to, you know, like I said, line 3 and 4, you know, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, it's like, hey, be confident in the things you're doing and be prepared, but don't be so arrogant that you're not, you know, you don't have the humility to listen or to realize that inflicting damage and showing that you're right times the power of 10 is not going to serve you in the long run.
Absolutely.
So moving further on, so you can wait and not be tired by waiting or be lied about. Don't deal in lies. So anything initially?
I mean, it's talking about patience. You know, being yeah. impatient is a fault for a lot of people. And sometimes even the best laid plans need time to unfold and for things to come together. And a lack of patience is something that's a real problem for people. And of course, you know, no matter who you are, where you are, at some point somebody's going to tell a lie about you, And the high road in communication and interpersonal dealings is to always have integrity, and your word is your bond. And so I think that's really important. Again, just bang, 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 one life lesson after another. Deal with people honestly, and accept that other people are going to say things about you that might not be true, and you're going to have to see through that and get past it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I first thought about is the things that, you know, good parents tell you is patience is a virtue, and usually there's no shortcut. And, you know, nowadays, whether it's faster computers, faster phones, more access to information, people don't want to hear that. But, you know, they want a pill that's going to make them lose weight, or right. they want to, you know, take a performance enhancing drug, you know, to help them get an edge. Mm-hmm. I think there's, you know, so many lessons in academics or in sports or in, you know, fill in the blank, that sometimes, you know, there may not be a shortcut. You got to put in the work and be patient. And the second piece about that is, just because somebody goes low on you doesn't mean that you need to. So it says, or being lied about and don't deal in lies. And one of the things I put, referencing an episode that we need to repost, because that's, it was early on. But I said, the golden rule doesn't stop with a-holes, right?
Right.
So it's like, you know, it's just like, hey, you know, just because somebody does, and, you know, and especially, you know, in competitive military careers, I mean, it gets cutthroat, right? I mean, just like any profession, you know, maybe more so, I mean, you know, than a lot of others, because, you know, the military becomes punitive,
right.
you know, after you've been around, because, I mean, think about it, between year 15 and 20, I mean, you know, it becomes an economic game at that point, right? They got to cut people, and it's like, hey, not everybody can make it to 20 plus years and have a retirement for the rest of their life. And, right. you know, and so you think about it, you know, you have people that are majors in the Marine Corps that have, you know, gone to good colleges, competed well, but it's like, hey, you know, I mean, they literally cut a third of the people that don't make it to lieutenant colonel on the first look. So you think about it, you've been promoted to be a field grade officer in the military, in the smallest branch of the military at that, and then they're going to cut a third of you, you know, between one rank to the next. And that's the rank that everybody really tries to get to, so you can have the, you know, make it to 20 years and have a, you know, a pretty healthy retirement. And so, you know, I learned about it early on that it's like, man, I mean, there's going to be people that, in a profession of integrity, that sometimes are just going to try to make themselves look good and make you look bad. And that says more about them than it does about you. And you just have to deal with it.
Right.
You
know? Makes sense.
Yeah. So moving on, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. So, it's like kind of the same thing, right? It's like, studying our enemies, especially over the past 20 years, you know, just because, you know, a lot of this, I'm going straight military side when I was reviewing this, because I think that's the context I was looking at it in. But just because our enemies, for example, don't have rules of engagement, doesn't mean we betray ours,
right? Right.
And so, that's one of the things I first came across. It's like, just because, you know, somebody's hating you, and, or, you know, in case, you know, doing a wrong, that doesn't mean that you have to deal in the same, you know, type of setting. So that's what I was thinking about on this one.
I think from my perspective, I read that hate is not a helpful emotion. It's a negative emotion, and it really doesn't lead to anything good. So you can't control maybe someone else's hate, someone else's emotion, if you will, but you can control your own. And that's yep. kind of the way I read that. And then, of course, you know, don't look too good, don't talk too wise. I think that's about modesty, and it's about...
Yeah, don't be a show-off.
Yeah, don't be a show-off. Be modest. And I think that's what that meant to me.
Yeah, I think we talked about doing Robert Greene's 48 Laws of Power. Oh yeah. And he talks about this. Yeah. So he talks about this quite a bit, where he talks about, you know, don't upstage your boss. Right. I think that's the way he referenced it. It's like, hey, you want to represent yourself well, but you don't want to do it in a way where it overshadows your superiors, or, you know, makes everybody jealous that they're going to be gunning for you.
Right.
You know, so do your job, do it well, you know, put that money in the bank, but don't, you know, come off the top rope every time, you know, you have a win.
Absolutely.
So, if you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim. So, you go a lot of ways with this, but the way I took it is, it's great to have goals and dream and think big, but you also have to be a person of action. And, you know, one of the things I know I learned early on in my business and military career is, you know, you don't want to talk about it without being about it.
Right.
And so, you know, the end state is not your thoughts. The end state is not your dream. You know, so you can't, you know, always be living in a cloud that you're not acting on. And that's what I took away from this.
Yeah, I think I read that exactly the same way. It's clearly a lesson on taking action and not being stuck in idea land. You know, there's some of the best dreamers out there didn't ever get anything done because they didn't take a step or take action. And definitely taking action is what that's all about in life, for sure.
Yeah, that one's – there's not a lot of completely black and white in this, which is good because it makes you think, but that was one of the more black and white pieces of it. So the next one I think started to hone in and take it to heart. So if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same. So this starts to, I think, strike it. At least for me, some very personal things. And I thought a lot about sports analogies, you know, simply as why back-to-back championships are such a huge deal.
Right.
In franchises like the Patriots and the Spurs are anomalies. You know, just because you did it once or have been successful doesn't mean, you know, you're going to do it the next time if you don't keep up the process.
Right.
And you see it so many times. And, you know, I live up here in Philadelphia, and the beloved Eagles, you know, they had that awesome win over the hated Patriots. And then the next year, the very next year, with, you know, majority of the same team, they were a shell of their former selves.
Right.
And I think a lot of it is, and honestly, you know, some of my best mentors, I talked a lot about this, you know, as you make it through a career, and you get to a point where you think you've made it, that's dangerous because people, and I hope we get some feedback on this because it's not, I guess, logical in a way, but I've seen it, is people deal better with loss and defeat than they do with success. You know, you look at it with lottery winners, right? Or you look at it with, you know, the analogy I was making, NFL players. I mean, you know, it's sad to say, but most of them are broke within 5 or 10 years of when they retire.
Right.
And they end up doing regular jobs. And so it's because, you know, when you're on the pinnacle and the top of the mountain, you know, you can't see the bottom. You know, you can't see where you came from. And in most cases, you're not willing to do the work, the same work, and stick to the process that got you there. So that's what I took from this.
That particular line reminds me a lot about I read Epictetus and Seneca quite often, and which are Stoic philosophers, and that sounds a lot like something Seneca would say, in a sense that there is no good or bad. You need to have a neutral emotion about things, that you're going to win, you're going to lose, but they should be treated fairly equally. And so I'm getting hints as I read through this. I get hints of Stoic themes, you know, that maybe, you know, kind of very, very Seneca like, maybe a little bit like Epictetus.
Yeah. That really speaks to how many of those ancient lessons just apply to human nature.
Yeah.
You know, they never go away. You know, regardless of technology or access to things or wealth, I mean, you're still a human, you know, dealing with the same types of things, right?
Absolutely.
So the next one, especially being in an election year, really struck me. You know, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools. So the first thing I thought about is politics, for the love of God, right? So how many times does someone, you know, that you agree with or support say or do something and it gets blown out of proportion?
Right.
And a knave is just like a, you know, an old word for, you know, somebody that's not an honest broker. You know, so if you know that you spoke something or did something from a good place and somehow it's still twisted, it's like, okay, you know, it's BS, but you still have to respond to it. You still have to deal with
it.
You know, and now in the 24/7 media and social media cycle, unfortunately, I mean, you can see something as black and white as possible, and you're like, oh my God, you know, you watch different channels or you thought, oh, that's really good that guy did that. And you see it, you know, spun in a different way. It's like, I don't know how people live with themselves by doing that. You know, it's like, it reminds me of the Machiavellian thing, right? It's like the ends justifies the means. It's like, if you don't care if you're lying or using a tragedy, if it's going to get you, you know, get to your end state. So,
yeah, I agree. And a lot of people have a hard time putting that away. You know, when somebody says something and, you know, and then dishonesty or just out of sheer foolishness, people twist things around, twist your words around, say something else. It's difficult to let that go. And then you end up in this argument and you spend so much time and energy trying to correct that. And boy, that's just, yeah, politics 101 for sure.
Yeah. So moving on, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn tools. So this one, you know, I started getting a little emotional about it because I was thinking about some of the stuff my dad dealt with, right? So he, you know, had worked his way up in a company like a lot of people, and then there was like a downturn in that case in the oil industry. And then, you know, he lost his job and, you know, we kind of had to go back to his roots, had to move the family to somewhere, you know, more comfortable, lower cost of living lifestyle, right, and watch him try to, you know, build everything back up. And so, you know, examples in the military, you know, you think about, you know, you take land in some cases like in Iraq that we had friends die for, and due to politics and other things, you know, out of your control, you see it given back essentially to the enemy, or, you know, given up too easy when people died for it.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, you think about the 2008 financial crisis where, you know, people had, you think about if you were in your earlier mid 60s and your 401k was where you had built your whole life wanting it to be. And then you have to work until almost you're dead to make up for, you know, the loss or barred time. And that's where the worn out tools, you know, comes into play. It's like, you never know when, you know, you've gotten to a comfortable point that it could be taken away from you, you know, so you can't rest on your laurels and not be afraid to, you know, push up your sleeves and work back to, you know, to gain that back. And it's a tough thing, but I think this is just another life lesson that, from this.
Yeah, that struck me. The worn out tools line struck me because, yeah, I see things in my own life that, you know, as a young man, as a young physician, I was getting out hard charging, doing things. And as I've gotten older, I've had to pick and choose what I decide to spend my energy on, because I realize time and energy are finite, you know, resources. And there have been things that I have failed at, and I've had to decide, well, I'm going to have to pick this up and to keep going on, but I'm not the same person I was 25 years ago. I'm different. Yep. And maybe my tools aren't worn out, but I see that touches me a little bit, that as we get older, our tools wear out. But are we willing to just keep going? Are we willing to keep building, keep, you know, trying to press forward, and even when it seems like everything's broken? And I see a lot of people that have, quite frankly, broken lives and broken situations financially, relationship-wise, health-wise, and it takes a lot of courage for a man, which is what this is talking about, to decide, yes, this is broken, I'm tired, I'm older, maybe things that I thought I could do are a bit more worn out, but I can move forward, and I'm going to keep moving forward, because that's what it means to be a man. You know, I'm using that generally speaking, a human. And yeah. it would apply to women for sure. So anyway, that struck me.
Yeah, and it's a good lesson that, I mean, you never really lose if you haven't given up.
Exactly.
Moving on, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it all in one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word of your loss. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of Stoic references here, but, you know, it reminds me a lot of, the good parts of America were built, right? There was a lot of, I know sometimes they're referred to as the robber barons and they get a bad rap because of how much wealth they controlled. But if you look at a lot of those people and families that, you know, built the industries during the Industrial Revolution in America, I mean, they took huge risks and did a lot of things of personal ingenuity and incredible amounts of work to do what they did. And, you know, the Vanderbilt family came to mind because they essentially did this because, yeah, so Cornelius Vanderbilt, you know, one of the ones that falls in that category, essentially, you know, did what this poem is saying. He went all in by selling all of his steamship empire and seeing the writing on the wall and going all in on the railroad. So in the long run, you know, he won in that case because he saw that, you know, the railroads and the infrastructure being built there was, you know, taken over from what the steamship had been doing. So I think it comes down to an unwavering faith in yourself. So if you can, you know, go all in and risk and lose, but start again and essentially have a short memory and forget, you know, all about that loss. I mean, that's an extreme example, but I think that's a valuable life lesson, right? That you can go from, you know, high highs to a low low and then just move on, you know, easier said than done.
As I'm listening to this, I keep going back and thinking, okay, this is about what it means, you know, to be an ideal man is essentially what the poem is about, the traits of an ideal man. And when I read this, I think of the term bold, mm-hmm. courage, and resilience. Those are the three terms I think about when I read those lines. I think a strong human, man or woman, must be bold because you have to take chances sometimes. You have to take a leap. And then, sometimes, you know, things don't work out. And you have to be resilient enough to say, well, I'm back to ground zero or below ground zero. And I now have to continue and start again. And that's you know, that's a sign of resilience. So I think very powerful three lines there.
Yeah. Moving on, and this is tied in, I think, and it's attached to the same stanza. But if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they're gone, and so hold on where there's nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. So in this case, I was thinking about a lot of people get to a point where many points in their life where they think they've given all they can, you know, whether that be mentally, physically, morally. But honestly, you know, few people really do. And that's not a slight on people, but, you know, endurance is a tough thing. And it really takes a lot of investment in yourself, you know, with your health, both mentally and physically and emotionally and spiritually. And a lot of people, you know, life happens and they haven't been able to invest enough in themselves to be able to deal with this, you know, over and over again. So I think about people that either we've had on the podcast or that we listen to, you know, like Brian Chontosh, Dave Goggins, you know, the guy that I've named my dog after, Colonel John Ripley, that performed like a ridiculous feat in Vietnam where he hung, you know, upside down, like crawling under a bridge to set explosives and blow the bridge up while he's being shot at for hours and hours, you know, like letting one hand rest while he's planting explosives and then, you know, let the other hand rest while he's planting explosives with the other hand over and over again. And so you think about these things, And I think the reason why, or at least in my mind, you know, sentimentally, the reason why people like this exist and are able to do these things is to really give us inspiration and say, hey, you know, I may never be able to do that or be put in that situation, but it just gives you an art of the possible, you know, formula to say, hey, you know, if I just refuse to give up and keep, you know, one foot in front of the other and invest in the things I know are good in myself, there's really very few limits on what, you know, people can get through.
I think about some people in my life when I read this, you know, the body for all of us fades, you know, we're our strength, stamina, flexibility, mobility, all of that declines over time. And I'm always amazed at the people with very strong wills that they continue to produce and continue to contribute to the world despite maybe a physical setback. And one of them, and I think we should have him on sometime, but my brother-in-law, Riley Woods, is a really amazing human.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know Riley, and yeah, the backstory is, you know, he was you know, a West Point cadet and suffered a serious spinal cord injury and has been better part of his adult life paralyzed from the waist down. And he's done so many amazing things. And I hope maybe we can interview him sometime and kind of bring this out. But he popped into my head when you read this because, yes, some of his abilities physically are gone, or I'm hoping maybe not forever, but they are gone right now. Mm-hmm. But that has not stopped him from climbing Mount Everest. It has not stopped him from becoming a professional, an attorney, and having a family, and, you know, serving his community, his church, and all these, you know, things that he does. He's creative, and he's constantly, you know, has a super active mind, very critical mind, you know, to be able to discern details and things like that. And this is someone that they and the will to do that. I was on a ride one time. We did a 150-mile bike ride. Mind you, I'm on a 10-speed or a bicycle race bike, and he's in a hand cycle. So he's pedaling with his hands. And I remember that looking down at him, we were probably 80, 90 miles into this thing, and he had some raw areas on his underarms, and he was just, he never said a word. And yeah. I said, hey, Riley, I think I'm worried about the raw area under your arms. It looks really thin. And he just kind of grimly looked at me and says, it's okay, I'll be fine. And he just kept pedaling. And I remember it, just thinking about that right now, just kind of, it pops into my head. I think about people who just decide, that's just my body. That's just my sinew, as Kipling says here. But my will says I'm going to hold on, and I'm going to keep going. And that's super powerful. And I see people like that, and, you know, I think a little bit, you know, my father has, you know, kind of orthopedic issues and things like that, and the guy just keeps on going, keeps on working, and I think about him a lot, and others, and patients that I know that have kind of pushed through difficult situations. But that's basically saying the mind is not, I mean, the mind and the will to continue and to keep going is the mark of a real man or a real woman.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Goggins thinks he's defined it where, like, your 100% in your mind is really 40% of your of your capacity.
Right.
And he's got some pretty empirical examples where, I mean, geez, man, the guy was done and, you know, peeing iced tea, you know, right. I mean, it's like, it's never a good sign when you're peeing, you know, looks like straight up Dr. Pepper.
Right.
And, but anyway, yeah, I mean, it's incredible. It would be awesome to have Riley on to talk about that and a lot of
I need to set that up.
Yeah, for sure. So moving on, if you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose your common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much. So this one, I don't know if I'm maybe a little jaded on this election year and everything's going on, but again, I'm thinking about politics. You know, you can give roaring speeches to your base and, you know, rub elbows with heads of state, but, you know, you have to stay grounded if you really want to do the things for the people. And, you know, one of the leading Stoic philosophers, and he never really saw himself like this, but, you know, he took a lot of the Stoic philosophy and put it into practice. I think probably Marcus Aurelius did it more so than anybody. And he became kind of a legend of Stoicism because, you know, the Roman emperors before him, I mean, were just wowed by, you know, being the richest, most powerful man on earth is an enticing elixir there, right? I mean, you could right. have anything you wanted. And so, and I think that if you're not able to, you know, kind of build that inner fortress while at the same time still staying, you know, loving of the things you know you love and trusting and not become too bitter. So I think this has just got a lot of that wrapped in. It's like, hey, you know, you have to be able to, you know, deal with, you know, whether it be fame or good things, but not, you know, lose the virtue that, you know, probably got you into those, you know, cases in some respects. And then, you know, and this, the second part is tough, right? So saying, you know, neither friends or foes can hurt you. And if everybody's important, but none too much. I mean, this is tough, right? I mean, especially with relationships, whether it be friends or romantic, it's like you have to go all in and give your heart, give your friendship to somebody. And you know, and it doesn't always work out. You know, friends, you know, you grow apart. In relationships, you grow apart. But I think the same things we talked about earlier and the same things we talk about all the time, if you know you're honest and doing the right things, and somebody, you know, grows apart or, you know, won't give you the time of day all of a sudden, you have to be in a place where that says more about them than it does about you. Now, it's different if you're the one lying, cheating, stealing, or, you know, creating the fissure there. But so that's different, right? But if you can maintain your integrity and then have somebody, you know, do that, then you're still in a good place. And, you know, that's kind of harsh, but that's also a Stoic way to look at it. Say, hey, you know, that's not about me. It's about them. You know, I wasn't the cause of this and I can't, you know, control their actions or reactions. So, I mean, this, you know, kind of thing takes it up a notch.
Yeah. So let me take my swing at this whole stanza here. Yeah. So yeah. Probably echoing very similar what you just said, but looking at this, he's talking about when you talk about crowds and keeping your virtue, walking with kings and but not losing a common touch. I think that talks to being humble and resistant to the pulls of power.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, there's a tendency when people, you know, it's like the cliche of the, you know, state rep or, you know, the congressman or whatever that goes and then, you know, gets corrupted by the great, you know, all the power and you know, all that kind of, it's kind of like the cliche of that. Can you walk with a king? Can you walk with leaders, you know, people in high positions of power, but not lose touch with others that are, you know, don't have that kind of power? And I think it says a lot about how we handle power in particular. And how, you know, how much we're willing to allow ourselves to partake in that or use that. I also like the way you described the lines about foes nor loving friends can hurt you. And I think a lot about relationships where people get hurt in abusive relationships or maybe in relationships that are unbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's good when people get into relationships that are unbalanced and they're taken advantage of. Or sometimes, like you said, relationships change over time and either those people learn to, because they're equals and they think and believe in themselves individually, you know, that's that healthy for them to be their own person and decide to be with someone else. But very often people live unbalanced relationships and codependencies and things where loving friends can hurt you. And, you know, and I think that's something that a lot of people, when put into that term, can probably relate to if they're in a relationship that seems like it hurts them, even though it's a loved one, or it seems unbalanced, or they feel trapped. Those kind of things. It's ideally you don't want to be in a situation where even someone that supposedly you love or that loves you is hurting you. And that's a valuable, very deep lesson for a, you know, an ideal human.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things you alluded to that struck me that I didn't mention is You know, and I've had situations both before I got married and, you know, friendships since then. I think anytime there's too big of an imbalance where, you know, whether it be, could be intellectually, it could be spiritually, it could be financially, where sometimes, you know, people become embarrassed, right? If you have a friend that, you know, you become way more successful than them, or they become way more successful than you. Sometimes people have, I mean, well, not sometimes, most of the time people have hard, you know, a difficulty dealing with it, right? You know, right. So like if you're, you know, live in humble, you know, situation, and your friend, you know, becomes a professional athlete, you know, even though you might stay in touch and it's cool to go stay with them, you know, you're just on different planes at that point, you know, and or in relationships. I think one of the most, whether it be friendly or romantic, I think any time that somebody is either has a perception or a reality that there's a big imbalance, it's just difficult to sustain, right? I mean, you think about the ultimate example is like the genius billionaire that's, you know, 60 plus years old, and then there's like the, you know, the hot model that, you know, never did anything besides be beautiful. You know, they get together, and right. You know, rarely does that, you know, till death do us part. You know,
right.
I mean, it's just because at the end of the day, it's like, hey, they're both getting something out of the relationship, but it's not the fundamentals that you need to sustain you know, a lifelong relationship. So I think anytime there's a big imbalance, just as humans, I mean, you can only deal with it for so long.
I also think this final section that we were just talking about before it closes is a tip of the hat to ego. You know, there's a whole book out there called Ego is the Enemy. And
oh, yeah.
You know, I've heard that said lots of times. And I think being aware of what our ego tells us and trying to avoid letting that make decisions for us is huge.
Yeah. So to close it out, you know, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And which is more, you'll be a man, my son. So I really, when I got to this point and everything built, I simplified it in the way I was thinking, in just that, you know, use your time and talents to the best of your ability, you know, while you're here. And, you know, there's a lot of lessons wrapped up into it. But I think ending on this is saying, hey, you know, life and the things that we go through, it's short. You know, and I've heard it put that the minutes and the hours are long, but the years become short, you know, as you go through life. And so I think that the more you can realize that and just, you know, do day to day, you know, using your time and talents to the best of your ability, then, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you might not be the richest person on earth, but, you know, you'll have valuable relationships, you'll have a valuable career, you know, you do the best you can with your health. And, you know, in this case, obviously, when it was written, you know, it's a, you know, you'll be a man, my son. And, you know, it's kind of a lesson to, you know, from a father to children. But, you know, that's what I took of the kind of final stanza there. So.
Somewhere I have an English teacher that's smiling whenever I say this is very similar to Henry David Thoreau stating to suck the marrow out of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a very similar closing with this poem. Yeah, I agree with all of that. You got to get the most out of everything. As we were wrapping this up, I was the whole time we were talking, I was going through and making a list of just the word that popped into my head first as we went through stanza by stanza. So if you don't mind, I'm going to read these.
Sure, that'd be fun.
And certainly any comments you have on them, and then we can close out.
Yeah.
So as I go down the list, bearing, humility, patience, honesty, positivity, modesty, actionable, resistant to adversity, overcoming adversity, bold, courageous, resilient, iron will, humble, resistant to the pulls of power, resistant to ego, don't waste time. Make the most of your time. Those are the things that popped into my head as we went through there. All super valuable lessons if you want to be a valuable human being.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great synopsis of, you know, what we talked about. So hopefully, you know, we'll pick more of these where there's a ton of meat in just a couple pages. And I think that, you know, as people get busy with life and you can have these things where you break it down at some point. But then, you know, once you've fully assimilated it and taken it on, you know, you can go back to it and read it again and it pops back in those lessons. And so, you know, that's why, you know, I thought I wanted to do this, and I think it fits people's lifestyles, and, you know, hopefully they get as many lessons out of it as we did.
Absolutely. I thought this was a good one, and I agree. I think we should definitely. I've got an entire tome. It's a fairly old book that has a lot of, it's mostly American literature that has little sections and poetry and also readings from other very long, complete, you know, books that some of them are super powerful. And they're all, it's amazing how wisdom just spans the test of time, you know, and I think this is probably, you know, a good thing that we kind of include and sprinkle throughout our episodes. And if you enjoyed this one, definitely I hope that people will leave a comment in the Future Focus Health Network, especially in the WFO Life tribe. If you haven't gone there, if you haven't joined the conversation there, please feel free to click on the link on the show notes. Leave us some type of review in iTunes, Stitcher, and where else are we at?
Spotify is the new big one that we got. I say, yeah. So that's Joe Rogan.
Kind of Google. I think yeah, Joe Rogan's new deal, right?
Yeah. So Spotify and honestly, they're like I showed you before. It's like if you just Google us, there's various other you know, I guess outlets that are picking us up. So you know, you can find us any way we listen via computer, cell phone, or other. Should be able to find us out there.
All right, well, let's wrap that up. I know we had a couple of glitches in our recording today, so it might have a couple of little patches here and there, but I think it's going to come out pretty good, and I look forward to hearing feedback on this episode.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks.